Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I'm Darren Hefty along with my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about building and managing soil phosphorus. And it's interesting, Brian, we're just looking at some soil tests today from a real high-yielding producer. And if you say, oh man, my soil phosphorus levels just aren't good enough, well, guess what? You can add to them. And by next year's crop already, you could have that phosphorus into the plants and getting some high yield. So don't think this is going to take forever to get it done. But if you're going to get it done, you better get moving on it now.
Well, yeah. But I mean, you certainly could do some stuff in spring. And, you know, one of the biggest things here, too, with phosphorus, it's just such a different nutrient than nitrogen. You know, for years as farmers, we talk about NPK. But let's look at the first two, nitrogen and phosphorus. Those nutrients could not be more different. With nitrogen, it can move very easily in the soil, and phosphorus absolutely can't. So that's probably our number one factor here. And that leads us to saying, well, nitrogen, you know, you could throw it out there a number of different ways, and it would probably still get into the plant. Whereas with phosphorus, if let's just say, for example, I completely mismanaged it and only put it in between the rows of my 30-inch row corn or 30-inch row soybeans, that phosphorus would be there and it's not going anywhere. You didn't lose it, but it's probably not going to get used up this next year. So placement is a much bigger deal with the phosphorus thing. I'll also say, you know, when we go to that third nutrient, NPK, with potassium, in terms of building that one up, that's especially in heavy soils where we farm and dry soils, that can take, I mean, it's kind of painstaking, it's expensive, it can take years, but the phosphorus thing is really not that way. You don't need that much phosphorus. It's not like potassium. You don't need much phosphorus in total, and it's pretty easy to raise your soil test levels if you want to. Well, we are broadcasting today from the Morton Studio. If you'd like to call in at any point during our show, we'd be happy to take your phone call, talk about anything going on in your farm, or if you've got questions for us about phosphorus. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. It's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. So yesterday, I was up in Manitoba, rural Manitoba, for a while, Darren. I didn't even have cell service. But anyway, it was a lot of fun.
Poor Brian. Didn't have great cell service.
It actually worked out good. Didn't have any disruptions or interruptions as I was talking to farmers most of the day yesterday up there. But, I mean, it was great. We had an awesome turnout. Thanks to those who were there. We just have tremendous support from our Canadian listeners. And we were up there talking about tiling, just general agronomy, a lot about soil fertility, a little bit about satellite imagery and some of the things that are being done with that now. So, yeah, it was great. It was a lot of fun. It was a little cold, so we weren't out at our tiling demo very long or anything. Cold and windy. But fortunately, it wasn't snowing there at the time, and so it all worked out great. But, you know, when I think about this whole phosphorus thing, this is one of the things we talked about, because a lot of those producers are in the same boat that you and I are. They're just trying to make money, and we've got a relatively tough farm economy now. And I had quite a few young guys there, too, who were asking me questions about, hey, what should I do on this, especially when it's rented ground. You know, when you have rented ground, I just told them, you have to think about that a little bit differently than your owned land, because if you don't use what you apply this year and you don't get that ground back, then somebody else can take advantage of your investment. So, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we should mine the soil out on rented ground or anything like that. I am saying we need to work very closely together with our landlords. I love seeing long-term leases because now as a farmer, I can invest more for the long term. But anyway, my point was, when we start talking about phosphorus, that's where banding fertilizer can really pay on row crops. Now, if a guy's raising wheat or something, yeah, that's going to be a little more challenging. But in 30-inch rows, boy, if I've got broadcast fertilizer, or broadcast phosphorus out there, there's a good percentage of that I apply that's not going to get used by my crop this year. So I look at that as more of a long-term deal, and that's why we talk so much to these people that rent and some of the young guys that can't afford to build their ground up yet. We talk to them about, hey, let's band that phosphorus, try to place it where we can take advantage of it this year.
There's so many guys that talk about, well, let's just fertilize each row instead of fertilizing the whole field. And phosphorus is one of those nutrients, as you mentioned before, it's not moving around very much, that the strategy works for. The other thing that we've done for a long time now, Brian, is put phosphorus down deep. And that's really helped us when we dry out in the summer, as we do most years, not this year, but most years. And it seems to improve our length of time we can hang on in a drought, and even our success rate in the drought. Back in 2012, our fields where we had put phosphorus and other nutrients down deep, it was a big difference for us. They held on and actually yielded pretty well that year, which for a lot of growers, 2012 is that year that you just want to forget about. But there were some good lessons for us too. Some of our new ground where we hadn't done that yet, not so good. Performance wasn't so good. So yeah, when we're talking about phosphorus today, we do talk about building, and I realize in many areas this is kind of a sensitive subject of, well, we don't want to go too far with this, and we got to be really cautious, especially if we've got a manure management plan and those kinds of things. So we're going to talk about how to deal with that on your farm as well.
We are really excited that at least we've gotten some harvest done here, but harvest has been way behind, and it's frustrating when you've got all those dollars sitting right there and you can't go take advantage of that. And then, like with our topic today, soil phosphorus, we like to do a fair amount of fall fertility. Nitrogen, you have to be pretty careful with. Phosphorus, it's a whole different deal, and the reason why you might be a little bit careful with it. In other words, I don't mind putting out in the fall. We're not going to lose it because of fall. We just have to watch out for soil erosion if we don't incorporate or deep inject our phosphorus. So those are some of the things we're going to talk about today. Again, our topic is building and managing soil phosphorus. We'd love to hear from you, though. If there's anything you want to talk about on your farm or you want to discuss this topic with us, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Farmers, wouldn't you love to have one set of concaves for all crops? With Estes Performance Concaves, you can. That means no more backbreaking work, changing concaves, or downtime. Plus, Estes Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage and a cleaner sample. It's the best money you can spend on your combine. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and take back your bushels. That's 765-650-4131.
Tired of having to babysit your grain bins, waiting to manually turn on fans until the weather's just right? Have you ever kicked yourself for losing an opportunity to better manage your stored grain? Operating the fans on your bins just got a lot easier with the Steps GMS app. The Steps GMS temperature humidity switch is a low-cost solution that allows you to operate bin fans according to your specifications. For more information, find us on Twitter at StepsGMS or visit us at StepsGMS.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem's Mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco and Vilify, two new products powered by Vellum. For application flexibility and season-long control, that's Evinco and Vilify, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about building and managing soil phosphorus levels, also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Happy to have Bill Brush with us. He's with B&B Consulting in California. Bill, when you think about phosphorus levels, is this something a lot of guys you're working with and in a lot of crops you're working with, you want to see at relatively high levels?
Yeah, there's a reason it's the number two listing on a fertilizer analysis, because it is so important to good, healthy crop growth. And most people work at what I consider to be below the maximum, or below the optimum level is probably a better way to put it. And because of that, I think they see some yield reduction. I noticed that in a lot of crops when I first started that we would get poor soil numbers, but we would get adequate foliage numbers. When we did our tissue testing, we would see adequate numbers. But yet, what we normally noticed was smaller leaf surface. And when we got good, healthy crops that had nice, healthy phosphate levels in the soil, what we did find was they had bigger leaves, and those leaves could turn into greater photosynthesis and ultimately a more healthy and more vigorous and more productive plant.
Yeah, that's interesting, noticing leaf size. And a lot of times we see that when we're foliar feeding, that we end up with a response of ultimately bigger leaves by trying to feed whatever we're running short in. And as you mentioned with phosphorus, so it's not one we're normally foliar feeding with. So we do see that leaf size thing correlate with some other nutrients as well. But, you know, with phosphorus, a lot of times when we're short, we feel like we don't have good mycorrhizal activity in the soil, whether we had flooding or extreme drought or some of those things. How do you overcome that? Do you find different sources of phosphorus you can push in, or is it just take some time to get that microbial life going?
Yeah, well, there's two or three ways to approach it. If you have an opportunity or have the ability to get compost and manures, you have some more available. That phosphate will be more available, plant available. It'll also stimulate a little bit more microbiology activity with that carbon material that goes down with those products. But that mycorrhizal interaction with roots and its uptake of phosphate, what you're looking at is just an expansion of the ability of that root in a bigger area, because that phosphate will not flow to the roots. The roots have to flow to it. So the bigger area or bigger net you can, so to speak, go out there and grab up phosphate, the better opportunity you're going to have to get it into the plant. It's never usually in most soils, and there's never an absolute, but in most soils, there's plenty of P there, but it's not available P. So when you're looking at soil tests, that soil test is giving you an indication of the amount of phosphate that will be able to be released from that soil in one growing season. And what you're trying to accomplish, you know, anybody that's farming, and I still farm a good number of acres of almonds and walnuts here in California, you know, phosphate's always one of those most expensive nutrients that we have to buy along with potassium. And so we're hesitant sometimes to apply it. The thing that you should know is if we can get our total phosphate numbers or the available phosphate numbers so that it's up at a higher level, and you can use whatever soil test, but I would always be trending to the level that they say is high, not just the level that's sufficient, because I think you'll get much better results. The one thing too about raising P levels is always at the same time look at your zinc levels. Zinc's extremely antagonistic to phosphate uptake. Phosphate is extremely antagonistic to zinc uptake. So if you're not bringing those up, you know, so that they're both at good, strong levels, if they're both low and you take one up, you'll have a trouble getting zinc if your phosphate levels get up, and vice versa. So it's very important to correlate those two together when you're looking at your soil test. And if you've got high levels of phosphate, then you're going to need to have high levels of zinc, and vice versa.
Hey, Bill, what do you use for a ratio there? We've been talking to a lot of people about 10 to 1, just to give you a rough number. But what is your number? Do you have something specific for your phosphorus to zinc ratio?
No, it really depends on your soil test. I mean, there are soil tests that we see that if you have a phosphate level of 40,
yep,
that's a high number.
Yep.
I've got other levels that we'll look at, so that we'll use back from some other labs that's 500 to 750 is a high number. So when you talk about correlation, then how do they do their testing? So what I've tried to do is go to the test, see what they both say is high, and don't worry necessarily about a ratio. Just make sure that they're both in the upper edges of where they think is a high level. One thing, too, is I always think you also need to check your crops. And what I mean by that is, do you have a high phosphate remover, you know, and how much are you taking out of that soil? And this is one thing I don't think a lot of people pay a close attention to, but for something like alfalfa out here in California, you know, if you start, and we're not talking about, there's two things you have to look at. One's uptake, the other's removal. It's the removal, taking it off the ranch, the ones you really have to worry about. But you get an alfalfa, which is basically grown everywhere, and it's going to take and remove with the alfalfa about 12 pounds of P2O5 per ton. So you can just multiply how many tons you get times that, and that's the minimum you should be putting back in to give you basically keeping you static where you're at. You know, crop like wheat, a lot of people just look at, say, how much does the wheat remove, and they're just worried about the grain, but then they go out and bale the straw and don't account for that too.
Yep.
You know, and the straw will remove, about 5 to 7 times as much as the grain will. So what am I taking off? It's going off the field and leaving the ranch, leaving the bank account, and I need to replace that back into my soil profile so that I'm not depleting.
Hey, you brought up a good thing with the perennial crops. Since phosphorus doesn't move very well in soil, we have people that raise alfalfa, for example. They're going to leave the stand in 4 or 5 years, and they say, all right, what should I do? Should I put out all my phosphorus up front, deep inject it, and then it's sitting there for the alfalfa, or should I try to spoon feed it? And our problem has been in a dry climate, heavy soils, we can't get phosphorus down into the ground very well if they just throw it over the top broadcast on an existing stand that's 1 or 2 or 3 years old. What kind of experience do you have in your soil types? And I assume it's a lot of irrigation out there too. How does that work for you?
Yeah, well, in California, we have, you can just about draw up any type of soil type from extremely light sandy soils that are real, real low exchange capacities, clear up to what you guys would consider muck soils of extremely high exchanges.
Yep.
And so, you know, there really isn't any set pattern, say, for California, we do this. It's your soil type that really makes the difference. What I tend to look at is that, I'm a soil test guy. If you're farming and not doing soil testing, I think you're missing the boat. There isn't any other thing that you do that you don't have crops removed, crops grown, irrigation water applied, or rainfall applied, and it's changing that soil annually, and you're checking your soil every 3 or 4 years. You're never going to keep on top of maximum production, and that's kind of where we're leaning everything towards, is we've got to get to that maximum economic yield. What I've found, though, there are a lot of new products, particularly coming out on the phosphate side, that don't get tied up. They're basically bound with some kind of, it could be a protein, it could be some kind of coating that hangs on to it, doesn't allow it to get tied up, like most phosphates that we apply, the 1846, 1152O, the superphosphate, those that get tied up relatively fast, we can get these others and get small amounts but make them plant available. We all know. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that's one of the big keys that we've got. A lot of these soils are tying up phosphorus. Hey, Bill, this has been great stuff. I apologize. We got to run, but thanks a lot for the time today. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Nice talk to you guys.
You bet. Thank you. All right, we will continue talking about building and managing soil phosphorus levels on your farm coming up on Ag PhD Radio.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG Soil Fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Go to whitemoldcontrol.com to learn more about the Contans No Risk Guarantee. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
BASF presents 5 Things to Do After Harvest. Number 5, read all mail received since April. Number 4, put on your marketing hat. Number 3, clean 4 tons of dirt off your equipment. Number 2, clean 2 pounds of dirt off your boots. And number 1, analyze your results and plan for next year. From all of us at BASF to growers everywhere, thanks for all your hard work during Harvest 18. Grow smart with BASF. We create chemistry.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about phosphorus, building it, managing it, and trying to maximize yield and soil health. Yeah, it's a little tricky, especially with a nutrient that doesn't move around very much. You definitely have to measure it and see where it's going. We've got Joe Thielen with us right now with Midwest Labs. Joe, how's it going?
It's going well. I think I remember to pack my sunglasses today, so it's even getting better.
There you go. If you get a little sunshine, it's been kind of tough in the Midwest lately to catch that sunshine. And really, honestly, it's been tough to get out there and get some of these soils sampled and get those samples in. When guys are sampling and it is a little soggy out, what do you recommend for them? How can they do this and still get good data?
I mean, if they can hold off a little bit on it until that soil moisture gets the more normal levels, that's always great. But I know that's not always going to be able to happen. So just do the best they can with our soil sample bags that we provide. There is a wax liner on the inside of them. So even if they are extra moist, they'll still make it to the lab. And at the lab, it's just going to take us a little bit longer to dry them down.
So you've definitely seen some of those little wetter than you'd like samples before.
Yes, we normally see those in the spring, but that's okay. We'll take them this fall too.
All right, so talking about that, we talk about soil pH a lot, and as we get pHs above 7 versus below, I know just looking at our results coming back from your lab, we see the above 7, a lot of times we'll hear the Olson bicarb test may be a little more accurate reading of what's going to be available for next year. And then the low pHs, the Bray seems to be the preferred one. How big a difference do you see? Because I don't normally see a real correlation between the two when we get to the pH extremes.
You're right. Anytime you're in a pH situation of under 7.4, the Bray extraction, the Bray P1, is going to be a good test. It's just that extraction, that Bray solution that's added to that soil sample, we'll get tied up if we get into those higher pH soils where there could be some of that free calcium, that limestone out in that soil. So that's where then we will switch to that Olson test or a bicarb test, which was developed in Nebraska for those high pH soils. It will pull out a little bit more realistic number. Generally speaking, it's still going to be lower than what you would see normally on a P1 number, and so there is a calibration to compare a P1 number to a Olson phosphorus number. You would take the Olson times 1.4, and then that would give you a comparable P1 brain number.
Okay, take Olson times 1.4 to compare to P1. Okay.
And here in Iowa, I think the Iowa DNR says divide by 0.6. It's going to get you a real similar number, but it may be just a hair different. But times 1.4.
Okay. What about the Malic 3? We get questions about the Malic 3 test, and I know it seems to be cheaper, but do you get accurate data?
You can get accurate data with that, yes. It can give you a different number there. When you're talking Malic 3, we're talking the same extraction, but there are two different instruments that can read that. And with those two different instruments, you will get two different results. And so when we're talking Malic 3 color metric, that's using the same instrument that reads a Bray phosphorus test. Those two are very similar. You'll have slight differences, but you can use the same number interchangeably, a Malic 3 color metric and a Bray phosphorus. When you start looking at the Malic 3 ICP, using it, reading a different instrument, that's going to give you a higher number. So you have to use a different calibration, a different recommendation structure with that. Both good numbers, just on different scales because it was read by a different instrument.
Yeah, a lot of times growers hear the advice that, you know what, you get used to a certain way of doing it, a certain lab and a certain test that they're running, just stick with it so you can see the year-to-year variability. Is that what the general advice is that you would give as well?
Yes, it is, unless you're seeing abnormalities. You know, if the lab is not reading it properly, if you're seeing inconsistencies with it, you know, you can always check, you know, have them rerun it at the lab. And there, if you're getting significant differences, you know, then it might be time to look at something else. Because the quality control has got to be top of line for any laboratory to make sure that they can reproduce that number if they rerun that sample.
Okay, now speaking of sampling, this has gotten a little more complicated with strip till, with deep placement of nutrients like phosphorus that doesn't move very much in the soil. And we get questions from strip till guys. Some guys will say, well, I'm just putting out what my crop removal rate is going to be, so I don't see much variance from in my strip versus in between the strips. And other guys say, well, I'm going to put on a build rate, so I'm going to have a bunch left in that strip, and then it's going to be more than in between my rows, but I'm going to just vary where I put those strip-till rows each year, and over time it'll even out. How do you sample through those kinds of things? Do you recommend still random sampling, or do you like to have two different samples in the zone versus in between? What are good practices?
You bet. If we're talking strip-tilling and they're moving that strip from year to year, I like to use it where if we still have, we can still see the rows out there. So if we see the corn stalk row or the bean stubble row, I like to take my first sample core about 3 inches away from that row. And then when I go and find my next spot, I like to be 6 inches away from that row. The third spot is 9 inches. And so you are going to do a random sampling. You know, you're going to get a little bit from that could be available in that actually band or strip, but you're also going to get some outside of it. So you're going to get a very good representative sample to send into the lab when you just move that sample probe over 3 inches each time you put it in the ground.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of messed us up a little bit on our farm is we're putting our phosphorus down in the strip till 8 or more likely 10 inches deep, and all of a sudden our 6-inch soil cores weren't going to be very accurate anymore when we had a little extra phosphorus that we put on deeper, so we ended up having to vary the depth of our samples too, which I get it. If you're looking at 6-inch samples all the time and then you start pulling 12-inch samples on your farm, there's pretty good odds you're going to see some different things on those. So that's kind of tricky as well. What would you recommend if we're dropping fertilizer in at 10 inches? Would you just recommend a 12-inch core if we really want to see that?
You know, I would. And I might even have you break that down and do a 0 to 6 and a 6 to 12. So you can see what stratification you do have for your soils.
Yeah, it's probably something I know Brian was really interested in, just doing 6 to 12-inch cores just to see what's down there. And yes, we've got 0 to 6 we've been doing. He'd kind of like to see a little bit more of that next 6 inches down too, just to see what we could modify at that level. Because you look at a lot of these high-yield farms, it's not just the top 3 or 4 inches that are highly fertile. They're getting fertility down deeper in the soil to feed those crops, even when it gets hot and dry out there. Joe, I guess I got about a minute left. Anything else you're learning this fall and any advice you'd have for growers with phosphorus?
Be patient and that's the main goal there is be patient and harvest safe and it all will work out. And we're ready. We actually expanded our laboratory so we can handle an additional 6,000 samples a day. So we're ready to go.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite a machine to catch all the soil samples that come through in a hurry, especially on a year like this one. Joe Thielen with Midwest Labs. Really appreciate having you on, Joe, and have a good fall.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Yeah, patience is one of the tough things. This is another thing Brian and I were talking about earlier today, and I'm getting a little antsy about things, and Brian's like, look, we got a long ways to go. Our goal normally is to be done by Halloween with our harvest of corn and soybeans on our farm, and for this area that usually avoids most of the risk of snow and gives you a little bit of time to get some other things done in the fall. So we're still on pace for that, and hopefully everything moves, because one of the things we're going to be looking at on our farm again is soil phosphorus levels. So on today's program, we're talking about building soil phosphorus levels, how to do that, and also how to manage the phosphorus levels in your fields that you've got. We'll get right back with more of your calls and questions too after this. Stay tuned.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstoss.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success, like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, we're talking about building and managing soil phosphorus. Brian, this is something we've been after a long time on our farm, trying to get those phosphorus levels right. And Bill Brush earlier in the show talked about tying that in with zinc, that if you're going to build phosphorus, you got to bring zinc along with it. Otherwise, you're going to end up with trouble.
Yeah, we had that very thing when we first started working on building our phosphorus levels up. We weren't really paying attention to that, so we ended up with zinc deficiencies right away. And that's the reason why we would talk to you about that is, hey, look at soil fertility holistically. Instead of just saying one thing, well, nitrogen's the answer to all my yield problems. Okay, look, there's going to be a point when you apply nitrogen, and once you reach a certain number of pounds, that above that, okay, you've basically eliminated nitrogen as a yield limiting factor. So there's something else. What is it? I don't know. That's your job. And quite frankly, that's our job as agronomists to help you figure it out. Is it phosphorus? Is it potassium? Is it zinc? Is it something else? What is holding your yield back? And well, it's fun. I like working on that as a farmer and as an agronomist. It's also, it kind of makes you pull your hair out sometimes because there are so many things to take a look at. Okay, I solved one problem. Well, I still have this other problem left. And you just keep working up the ladder on all those things. But hopefully in the long run, you are making progress. You are gaining yield. But yes, we absolutely want you building soil phosphorus if you are in a low or even in some cases medium type range. But you've got to look at all the other things too. So don't just assume that, hey, if I build my soil phosphorus, I'm automatically going to have high yields. If you do build your soil phosphorus and you aren't getting yield gain, that tells you we've got another problem out there on the farm. All right, just to change gears for a minute, yesterday I was up in Manitoba, and one of the things that we were talking about was satellite imagery and just how farmers can use that to better manage their farms. And a company we've done a lot of work with is Farmer's Edge. So next we've got Ron Osborne on the show. Ron, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So one of the other things, I was talking to your company president just a couple of days ago, Wade Barnes, mm-hmm. and he just said one of the kind of interesting things with imagery and especially data anymore is it's giving tools to farmers to not just make more money, but also help reduce risk and help in terms of the insurance side of things. So mm-hmm. I guess, first of all, before we get to what I'm sure you want to talk about with your announcement today, but can you just talk to us about that really quick, about how can data help a farmer potentially going forward with an insurance company?
Well, I think that there's a viewpoint that we have, that our customers have, that our retail partners have, and really everybody has, is that the technology that we bring to the farm is risk management. It's the essence of risk management, using imagery and weather and our telematics and the things that we provide for that mixed fleet farmer. It's really about identifying pressures and risks more scalably, automatically and efficiently than really ever before. And that's really only enabled because of the infrastructure, the imagery, things like that. But where does that touch insurance? Well, it touches insurance because the opportunity for the farmer to use best practices, and a lot of the farmers are already, you know, embracing this notion, right? They want to be using best practices. Well, when you're using best practices, you should be rewarded for it. right? Not just rewarded at the yield level, but rewarded from your other business partners. So we've been spending a lot of time and effort looking at how can we enable that reward. We've had, and I'll give you some examples here. The farmer that's using best practices and working with his or her retailer should be rewarded by protecting the crop throughout the season, by putting whatever chemical or chemistry down, by putting any sort of fertility regimen down that's designed to maximize the yield potential. When times are tough, and obviously right now commodity prices are challenging for some, when that farmer needs access to working capital in order to protect that crop, what's happening right now is in many cases they're struggling to get that access to that capital. So our approach was simple. How can we help our farmers and our customers solve that issue? Well, we did that by building a program with Global AgRisk. And so it's one of the relationships that has truly been wonderful in the sense that by collaborating with Global AgRisk, our retail partners and our customers are able to actually get access to the working capital that they need and the protections that they need during the most critical windows of time when they need to address an issue in the field or take some kind of corrective and preventive action. So our focus really has been enabling our customers with tools that help them during their most critical windows, because the Farm Command platform, our technology, helps to identify those issues passively and automatically. Why would we not be able to reward them? And now we have.
Yeah, like yesterday, for example, we were talking a lot up in Manitoba about drainage and then fertility things like our topic today, which is phosphorus. But to your point about best practices, I just think about this on our own ground. Okay, so now that I've got tile in there, now that I've done a much better job on soil fertility, I'm way more drought tolerant. I'm way more excess moisture tolerant, if you want to put it that way. I mean, all these practices have really reduced my risk, but I may have the same insurance rate as someone else, and I don't really feel like that is exactly fair when I've invested, hundreds of dollars to reduce my risk, which in effect makes me a better person, a better candidate for any insurance company to work with. They have a lot less risk working with me than working with, well, let's say any of my ground where I haven't made those investments.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you take a step back and you say, why has the insurance industry evolved the way that it has? I think, at least from my perspective, it makes sense. It's because in the past, the data sets didn't exist.
Right.
So what the insurance companies legitimately had to do was deal with the data that they did have. Well, times have changed. And the technologies that we obviously work with, the daily satellite imagery and all the infrastructure that we put on that farm, it finally now enables the question to be asked and answered is, can we move beyond just area-based insurance, averages, county T-yields, things like that? Can we actually get to the point where we can reward the farmer that's using best practices because of his or her work on the field? And the answer now is yes. But the only way that that's truly being enabled is because of the advancements in technology and the integrated nature of at least the things that we do on the farm. The mixed fleet telematics, the daily satellite imagery, and so forth.
All right. So, Ron, I've only got about a minute left here, but how exactly will that work with you and Global AgRisk in terms of if a farmer wants to lower his insurance rate potentially, what does he need to do?
Well, it's pretty simple, really. It would be if he's a Farmer's Edge customer, give us a call, and we'll be able to introduce them to the Global AgRisk team and initiate that conversation. Ultimately, Global AgRisk is the company that's providing those services. And if they're a Global AgRisk customer that's currently looking at what kind of technologies can I use that would help remove frictions between, all the different data sets and that process of being on board as a Global AgRisk customer, then give them a call, because of the relationship that we have now is really it's centered on enabling and removing frictions and just making it easier for everybody, because the infrastructure is there. We've put the infrastructure out there. Now it's time for the farmers to get rewarded by using best practices that they're already doing because of our tool, and doing it in a much more efficient way that they can be rewarded by from Global AgriSk.
We've been talking to Ron Osborne with Farmers Edge. Ron, interesting stuff. Thanks a lot for being on the show. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a great afternoon.
Yep, you too. All right, we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag coming up after this. We have so many questions just here in the last couple of days that have come in. I apologize, we're not going to have time to get to them all, but we got some great ones coming up. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/fmcfreedompass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
For over a year, I've been butchering the scripts for the Farmer's Edge ads on my podcast. But hey, it's not my fault. Honestly, they offer too much stuff. On-farm weather stations, that little plastic data transfer thingy they shove in your tractor's port, daily satellite imagery, their integrated farm management software, soil sampling, variable rate technology, it goes on and on and on. And they expect me to do that in one ad. That's why I just say Farmer's Edge. It's a company developed by an agronomist to help make you a better farmer.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
It's the mailbag, the mighty mailbag. Ask the questions with glee. It's the mailbag, the mighty mailbag, with Brian and Darren Hefty.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Martin Studio. Today we are in the Ag PhD mailbag time. If you'd like to call in, we'll take your call or question at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, just like Brent did. We're going to take his question here first. He said, I want to ask Brian and Darren what their thoughts are on spreading phosphorus to help build my levels up in a no-till situation. We seed with air drills, 3/4-inch opener and 10-inch spacings with mid-row banders. I feel we're putting as much seed-placed phosphorus as we can safely, so what other methods should we consider in our no-till?
Yeah, it's a real challenge in no-till. I mean, this is the one
nutrient. Because you can't get it deep.
Right, because you can't get it deep. This is the one nutrient. Well, this one and zinc. Those are my two biggest concerns. Potassium can move somewhat in soil. I mean, in a heavy soil in dry country, yes, after 5-10 years, you'll get it down 2 to 4 inches deep, probably, but that's never going to happen with phosphorus and zinc. I mean, with the standard fertilizers that people have traditionally used. So let's say it's MAP or DAP, and let's say it's zinc sulfate. To think that those are going to get way down deep in the ground where a lot of our root growth is, it's just not going to happen. Yesterday, I was up in Manitoba, and we were talking about soils. And one of the things that I brought up is a study that we had done. This goes back a few years ago, where we'd gone out and soil sampled every 1 inch going down into the ground to 12 inches. We did this in long-term no-till, long-term strip-till, and long-term conventional till. And what we found is one of the interesting things, we don't talk about it a lot, is the soil pH was really varied. The lowest pH was in that range of 4 to 9 inches deep. Well, you got to remember, roots kick out organic acids. They are trying to lower the pH to chelate a bunch of nutrients, to make a bunch of nutrients available that wouldn't normally be available. Here's my point. We could really see that with the soil pH going down more in that region in all three tillage systems, no-till, strip-till, and conventional till. My point is, what that tells me is that no matter what the tillage system for corn and soybeans, these are long-term corn and soybean guys, the vast majority of corn and soybean roots that were actually doing a lot were in the 4 to 9 inch depth. Okay, the other thing I want you to think about is if we end up with a dry summer, the top few inches are going to dry out first. Once you get down a little bit, and especially in no-till, you should have some moisture down at 6 inches, 8 inches, 9 inches. So it only makes sense that when nutrients go in with water, that we would try to put fertilizer down to those kind of depths to get the maximum return on investment that we're looking for. So how could you possibly do that in complete no-till? I don't know. Now, this isn't really technically no-till, but if there was some way to run a great big coulter or a shank every so many inches, let's call it 30 inches, or even for that matter, you could possibly do it 60 inches wide and then come back and split the middles or something the next year. And you wouldn't have to do that super often if you put some decent rates on. But I'm just saying, I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you on how you get that deeper. I don't advise you in no-till to go out and lay that phosphorus on the soil surface. We did that over about a 10-year period and that on our farm, and that was a disaster. I mean, our yields were not where they needed to be, in part because our phosphorus was not where it needed to be. And also, I want you to think about the environmental risk, and we didn't talk about that today. But when we talk about building and managing soil phosphorus, one of the most important things you need to keep in mind is phosphorus is the number one water quality issue we have in North America today. Everybody thinks nitrate right away, but if you're a livestock producer, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You are heavily managed on phosphorus now, and it all has to do with soil erosion. If we can simply get the phosphorus down even a couple inches deep or more, we're pretty protected from erosion loss. Because don't forget, when your soil moves, your phosphorus is going to move with it if you have left your phosphorus in that depth in the soil. So I'm just trying to say, it makes a lot of sense to do something to get it down a little deeper. And if you're only 3/4 of an inch deep, that's not a lot. And I would encourage you at least think about, and you run through the options yourself. I don't know what else to tell you other than deep injection, and maybe the least amount of tillage you could do would be like with a deep coulter, a big coulter. But do something to get at least some phosphorus down a little bit deeper. You'll be happy in the long run.
All right, thanks for the question. I'm going to hand you a couple of samples there, Brian. I'm going to take a quick question here from Lane, and he said, I'm wondering if you'll be holding soil and agronomy clinics this winter, and if you have a schedule available. You bet we do, Lane, and yes, of course, we're going to be having some clinics, and we've got that all posted right now at agphd.com. Just click on our events tab, and you can see where all the clinics are at and so forth. And we'll be at Commodity Classic and probably a few other places as well. So, yeah, that's the place to look for wherever we're going to be speaking. And if you've got a specific question about a specific area or something, you can send that back too. But got a bunch of clinics planned for this winter, and we're pretty excited about all that content that we're going to share with you too. Okay, Brian, next question comes from Mitch. He's in Nebraska, and he said, I've got a question on manure. We're looking to apply some here by winter to one of our farms. The question is, should we apply 15 or 20 tons per acre? Can our soil hold it, specifically the P and K? There's only about 5 pounds of available nitrogen per ton, so that's no big deal. But the P and K are at pretty high levels. Our soil, here's a little bit about our soil. Our CEC is about 7.5 on average. Our average organic matter is only at about 1.3%, so it's pretty light ground. Just wondering how much P and K we could actually hold.
Phosphorus, you can hold a ridiculous amount, so you're never going to hit that on phosphorus. On the potassium, is it possible
that you think so, Brian? A lot of guys with super light soils say they can move phosphorus down through the soil with a lot of moisture. Now, I'm not sure where Mitch is at.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying could he eventually, if he does this year after year after year after year, could he have a problem? Sure, he could. But, I mean, not where we're at right now. He's got P1 phosphorus levels of 20 to 30, and he's going to make one decent application and get it down in the ground. I'm not that worried.
Right, but we also don't know what manure management programs are in your area.
Well,
so
yes,
you've got to follow whatever legal things there are there too.
But that wasn't the question. The question was just, can my soil hold it? Yes. Given the information you have given us, yes, it can. I'm not too worried about the phosphorus. Now, the potassium can move in soils that are relatively light, and yours is relatively light with a CEC of 7.5. Now, potassium isn't going to move to any degree, even close to what nitrate or even sulfate will move. So to think that you're going to lose that potassium that you put out there, especially when it's in the manure form, I would doubt it. So I'm going to assume. Oh, and how many pounds did that end up being, Darren? Do you know on the potassium?
How many pounds were in that?
Did you run the math on if he was to do, let's say, 20 tons?
Yeah, okay. The numbers are there. I circled
them. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I got it there. So it's 35 on K.
Times 20.
Yep.
That's 700 pounds of K.
Yep, 700 pounds of K. Can the soil hold all that? That's a lot. That is a lot.
Yeah, I thought the rate seemed pretty high. I don't think I'd go near that rate. Maybe half that rate that you're talking
about. To be safe, yes. I'm much more worried about the potassium than I am the phosphorus. The phosphorus, yes, your soil will hold it, but here's the other thing. When you get your soil levels built up to a certain degree, then at some point you have to say, I can't put manure there anymore. So if you're trying to do this once and you're not coming back again for 5 to 10 years, I can understand why you would want to do that kind of a really high rate, but that's a lot. That is a lot of potassium. I think your soil would probably still hold it fairly well, but that's really pushing it on the potassium side. 700 pounds in only a 7.5 CEC. I'll just say this. Unless you have unbelievably great crops that are going to be able to pull that all out, because that's the whole key here. We've got to pull it out before we lose it. Can you do that with the phosphorus? I believe absolutely you can. But with that potassium, if you get crazy amounts of rainfall next year, it's possible you could start losing some, maybe not next year, but by a year or two down the road, yes. I would be a little bit worried about the K.
Yeah, it's something that we hear all the time. Well, I've got access to manure, and maybe it's even free. You just want to run a good analysis and then don't overdo things, because you definitely can run into problems.
Well, salt is the big problem, and that's what we didn't talk about, and I don't see anything on here with salt, but that's the number one thing
you want
to get
check. A complete analysis on that manure. That's the first thing
don't
that I
overdo it on salt, especially.
Thanks for listening to our program today, and be sure to join us each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned now for Shark Farmer Radio.